Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, December 21st, 2008. It is now about 8.02 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government. Now, before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Good evening, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano. I'm your host this evening for Liberty Talk Radio. I invite you to call 646-652-4620 with any comments, any questions that you might have. Tonight, we'll open it up for any subject whatsoever. Before we continue, I'd like to encourage everyone to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. He discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on contraryinvestorscafe.com. contraryinvestorscafe.com. It is really excellent, folks. He also has a subscription newsletter that I highly recommend that you look into. And it's only like $49 or $59 a year, and it is excellent. It goes into detail as to what is happening on a macroeconomic level and also makes some suggestions where you may put your money and during these very hard times.
Very hard times.
Sounds like we have an echo. Oh, but the echo went away. Thank goodness. This program is now available on our Sunday evening, on Sunday evenings, that's this evening, through Restored Republic Radio Network. We appreciate their commitment to our program and encourage you to visit their website, rtrradio.com, for an entire listing of informative programs. Lastly, I'd like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, enough of that. Folks, I'm still having a tremendous difficulty with my voice. I've been on heavy-duty antibiotics all week, and they haven't helped. So now I have to go through another battery of tests to find out why my throat is not working properly. I will try the best I can to get through this hour. You can help me immensely if you call 646-652-4620. Any subject is welcome this evening, and any questions that you may have. I would prefer if you did most of the talking, though. Folks, the title of the main focus of our speech, of our program this evening, is Government Ponzi Schemes. Now, that may seem kind of quirky or counterintuitive, but I'd like for us to just think for a moment. Bernard Madoff is being allegedly... is involved in the largest Ponzi scheme known thus far. They say possibly over $50 billion worth. And everyone seems to be up in arms. He's the most hated person in New York City, I believe. And the government is going to come down really hard on him. And justifiably so. I mean, he scammed thousands of people out of their money. But when you think about it, what he did is he took people's money and just promised them that they were going to make all sorts of big, big money when everyone else was losing money. In other words, he got people to believe him. You know, he was a charismatic person who had a great resume, and people just threw millions and sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars at him for investing purposes. It was that old, good old-fashioned greed that took over. No one really looked that closely, and those people that did look closely really did not didn't do much about it. In fact, when they did look closely and they went to the SEC, What happened was the SEC drug their feet and basically did nothing. When you think about it, these people, like I said last week when we talked about this, these people were very, very well-informed financial people, and they were handling other people's money. Now, this is the secret. They were handling other people's money. Think about that. It wasn't so much the people themselves, although there were many people also doing that, but the big money came from people who were handling other people's money. And instead of conducting a due diligence, they just gave this guy money, carte blanche, just assuming that he was some sort of godlike figure in the financial community and was going to be able to turn rocks into gold, you know? So they just believed him. You know, if it's too good to be, it looks too good to be true, it probably isn't true. You know, and exactly what they did. They fell for the oldest Ponzi scheme, and this is, you know, and these are from people who should have known better. Now, we all know that. That's water underneath the bridge. And where I take exception is the government coming into this whole mess, in a sense. No, they should. They should be persecuted. There should be lawsuits and this whole bit. But I think it's so disingenuous that our government get involved because, you see, our government runs the biggest Ponzi scheme in the world. $50 billion is nothing to our government. Their Ponzi scheme is in the mega trillions of dollars. And what am I talking about? I'm talking about Social Security. What is the government doing? The government says, give me your money, you know, and we'll put in a lockbox for you so you'll have it when you retire. We want to make certain that you don't put your money away because we, the government, doesn't trust you enough to take care of yourself, to put money away for when you'll need it when you get older. So we are going to take the money away from you and we're going to set it aside, so to speak, or supposedly put it aside for you. And at that time, when you retire, we will give you the money back. But however, should you pass away from this earth, this world, before you're 66 or 62, however, whatever age you decide to retire, you know, all that money is gone. In other words, you've invested, you've put your money, the government is taking your money all your life. Let's say you started working when you were 16 years old, 16 years old to the time you're 66, for 50 years. And if you drop dead on your 66th birthday, you get nothing. Now, how could the government, anyone in government, look at Madoff in the eye and say, you're guilty of an egregious crime against humanity? That doesn't make any sense at all, because Madoff should look at the government back and said, but I learned from you. And wouldn't that be appropriate? Wouldn't that be an appropriate response? And if you look not only at Social Security, but everything else that the government does, they're all Ponzi schemes. But let's get back to Social Security. They don't have the money for Social Security, so they're borrowing it. They're borrowing it from future generations. In other words, when you're born in the United States, you're born with a debt. A debt because the government squandered people's money that they should have put away. So what they do, what the government in fact does, is just prints money, which not really money, it's just paper, you know, floods the market with extra paper, inflates the money supply, you know, to pay the people back. The ultimate Ponzi scheme. We have a caller. Hold on, please. Caller, you're on the air. Caller, you're on the air. Your first name, please.
Yeah, I'm Michael.
Michael, yes, Michael.
This is Michael, yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to comment on what you had said earlier about when a person dies, that the Social Security money is going to be gone. I just wanted to put a side note. I've been married for 21 years and plan on staying married to the same woman the rest of my life. And I'm an advisor financially to people, and actually what happens is when a man dies, he can have three or four wives draw on that account when he's gone.
Oh, yeah, that's provided he's married. I agree. I agree. But if he's not married, I'm just talking about the individual. But if that individual is not married, that money's gone.
Correct. But if he gets married five times, it's even worse on the other side. I mean, the people that are, you know, having multiple wives end up draining the system faster because of that. I mean, she actually gets to opt on which husband had the most income from Social Security, regardless of how many women are drawing on that.
You mean that if, well, what if the person is divorced? Does the divorced wife then get the Social Security too?
That would be correct. She could draw on it as well as his existing wife when he's gone. And she could have even been remarried. And her next husband, regardless, if he had a lower amount of Social Security, then she would have picked the first husband.
Well, Mike, it seems like this is worse than I thought it was.
Oh,
because
it's
a Ponzi scheme in reverse.
Exponentially the other way.
Yeah.
It's, the deal is, I mean, this again goes against our founding fathers' basic fundamentals, which, you know, would have been, hey, let's all stay married, with the exception, I guess, of Thomas Jefferson and some other people in the woodpile back there. But unfortunately, what happens for, you know, again, what you're saying is absolutely, I'm dead center with you on that. You're making a great point. And at the same time, there's an added footnote. It gets worse for the guys that stayed exclusive, you know, through their life. Now, and I'm not talking about a guy remarried, you know, later on. But if you get married five or eight times, those women all get to draw on your Social Security, and they get to pick which one's higher of all their husbands.
Well, that puts the government further in debt then.
Absolutely.
Increases the liability of the government. Right. All right. I'm putting out an edict right now, and that edict, the mandate, is that no one is allowed to get divorced anymore because it'll cost me more money.
Yeah. Well, they ought to just, it's okay to get divorced, but if you get divorced, you opt out of your Social Security provision that your ex-husband would have given you.
Okay. They have to get divorced, though, right?
Well, I mean, you know, if this thing works out right, yeah. If they're widowed, that's okay. We ought to give them that exception. If the guy is remarried and his first wife passed, I mean, let me rephrase that. No, yeah, it would have to be divorced. I mean, there wouldn't
okay.
be a way. If his first wife died and then he remarried, the first wife, you don't have to worry about.
Being a financial advisor to others, where are you recommending people put their money these days?
Well, I mean, here's my problem with that one-size-fits-all question. I mean, number one, this is where I really get bogged down with, you know, some of the people out there voicing their opinions where you got to do this, you got to do that. I think, number one, you got to have a very comprehensive strategy. And what's happened in the environment today is it's magnified. If you do not have a comprehensive strategy of what you are doing and really working with somebody, just like you said, on a Madoff guy, you will know them by their fruits. I mean, you typically are going to be able to discern through a season or three with your advisor if they have your best interest at heart. But I do definitely think that there's a couple of key moves that people can do. I mean, gold, and I'm not talking certificates, I'm talking the actual commodity itself, holding it, has never been a bad place to store money. And it's heads you win, tails you tie. I mean, if what happens, and we do see hyperinflation, we do see interest rates skyrocketing because of the printing of the money, and that will be a trickle-down effect, there's no way around it. They have to do it. The numbers aren't there to support the debt that we're in, plus the Social Security system failing, Medicare, Medicaid. All the pressure is coming. Gold cannot be a bad place. Now, 100% in that is also not a good move. I also see cash value life insurance being taken away, contrary to what a lot of people out there tell everybody, oh, whenever you're 68 years old, you're not going to love anybody, so you're not going to need that. That's the ultimate way for me to be a sovereign nation, for my kingdom to not be dependent on your kingdom, Joe. My wife will not be dependent on you because I have permission to spend all my assets, and she's set up with the insurance, which that one will be taken away. The tax-free status of that should be killed before too long, and then a train will leave the station, and people won't have the option of buying them.
Well, I don't think I understand that. What do you mean by that? I guess I lost something in the translation, Mike. I'm not certain what you mean by people losing it. What do you mean by that? How are they going to lose it?
Well, it's the last frontier, okay? Your insurance products are the last ones that will give people money income tax-free and at the same time give you access to cash values without tripping the wire at the United States Treasury. I mean,
right.
The IRS, when you take money out of an insurance product, it is considered a loan.
Okay, right.
And so you have access to money to be your own bank and to pay yourself back, which is
right.
a huge, misnomer. I mean, the financial institutions do not want you to be solvent to borrow from yourself to buy things.
Right.
So they teach that that's not a good thing. But when I say that, in a very comprehensive strategy, let's go back to gold, for example. Who owns the gold that we purchase?
That we purchase? I guess we do.
Well, prove it. There's no title and there's no ownership on that asset.
That is correct, other than possession.
So other than possession.
Yeah,
that's like our firearms. Nobody knows who has those, contrary to what a lot of people say. Oh, they're registered. Well, they're only registered if you register them. Nobody knows. Those
right,
do
that's
not
correct.
Have to flow contractually
right.
to somebody. Okay, in my insurance, that's a different deal. It is deeded, it is titled, it has a beneficiary, a directive on it.
Right.
But one extreme to the other, I can change that ownership to the trust that says I don't own it if I want to irrevocably set it up, if I want to get very fancy, okay? But for the main purpose of that insurance contract, let's say I don't give it away and I own it, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm worth... Give me a number, $3 million in death benefit whenever I'm 70.
Okay.
Okay. Now I have permission to spend all of $3 million worth of assets, including knocking my 401k and IRAs out first.
Right.
Because at 70 and a half, they're going to force you to take them regardless of your tax record.
Correct. Right.
Now, taxes got to go up. You with me?
Yep.
Okay. So I want to kill that one first. If I'm in the highest possible tax bracket, which I want to be in whenever I'm older, because it means that I've been responsible and I've accumulated money.
Right.
I kill that dog as quick as I can. 7 to 12 years, it's gone. I'm now P2. You with me?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't have to use that asset to provide for my wife.
Right.
It's an individual retirement account. It's not designed to build two people's retirement. So it's gone. Now I spend down my other assets, which under current law are capital gain.
Right.
You with me? Which is
yeah.
half the ordinary income tax bracket. Better than that in current law, but it's going up in a year from next week.
Right. You think the capital gains, what's it, 15% now, long-term capital gains?
It's already written. And see, Bush will get the blame for that because it's already there. It's going from 15 to 20.
Okay.
And obviously the tax on estate taxes went in 2011 all the way back down to $1 million. But they're probably going to do something about that in 2010. It's going to be estate tax free year for everybody, which brings up a really weird topic, but we won't get there. So I spend my assets down in the capital gain bracket next. Are you with me?
Yeah.
And you too. So I go from a 15% federal bracket down to zero, because as I'm eating into the corpus of my investment, I'm getting to my principal cost basis, which is income tax-free coming back.
Right,
out.
Right, great.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, I spent those over 7 to 12 years. I'm 90 years old. Under current law, watch this one. You can $500,000. We're getting a little bit of an echo. You got me?
We have a bad. Uh-oh, we have an echo now. Hello, Mike?
Okay,
are you still there, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Mike,
yes,
continue
sir.
Again. I'm sorry. I think we had a breakup or something, but good. Continue.
Okay. So under current law, you can sell your home one time every 2 years, married filing jointly, and taking $500,000 tax-free. You with me?
Right.
Okay. Now, if I'm 92 years old and my death benefit from $3 million has grown 14 years, Joe, we're probably talking about $4.25 million worth of enforced death benefit now.
Yeah.
So I've gone up $1.5 million. I can reverse mortgage my house and take out $1 million income tax free.
Right.
with or without the insurance, you can do that. But I promise you, it is very uncomfortable for a person over 70 years old to spend all their assets down.
Oh, I know that. Right. I see.
With that,
yeah.
Insurance product, with that insurance product appreciating in value, I can look at my kids and they say, well, we wanted that house when you were gone. And I'm like, that's probably not true. You want the capitalized value of the asset, but if you want it, go take the cash out of my insurance and buy that banker off. But what I've just done is I've eloquently eliminated taxation by sending away my 401k, going through my capital gains taxable assets, and then spending down the house and getting more than $500,000 out of it, all by the security blanket of me saying, well, shoot, I had an insurance policy. Now I'm 97. I mean, here's the irony in these products, Joe. There is a market out there that will buy an insurability of people over the age of 74 years old that is very, very rich, because these trust funds and these hedge funds and these money managers realize the guarantees inside of these insurance products are so attractive that if you've got a $5 million capacity to buy insurance, I promise you they will buy it from you if you get a standard or preferred rate. So these guys that aren't buying insurance products, I mean, they could go and sell it on the open market, and it even gets better. The money these insurance or these trust funds pay for the product is inside of a trust fund, which is outside of your estate. If you don't want to take the cash, leave it for your heirs, and it goes income tax and estate tax free.
Well,
these are huge things that are very, very effective comprehensive strategies.
All right, what happens though? I mean, what happens to all of this? You know, if the currency devalues, I mean, how does it change?
Well, I mean. Okay, on my first point, on gold, you technically are fine when the currency devalues because you've got something that's standardized, again, in the world economy. I mean, if those people out there listening, when you read the Creature of Jekyll Island and from Jekyll Island and books and reports on historical facts, the bottom line is... that's what Rome, how Rome fell. I mean, they were shaving their coins. It was a standard in the world for so many years, and they start shaving that coin down, and people said they're not dependable. That's right here at this nation. So as that dollar decreases in value, taxes will go up. And the thing about it is, you know, again, I still believe in the country. I still believe in capitalism. I still believe it'll fix itself. But during the times where pressure goes up and interest rates are skyrocketing, you have the ability to borrow against that insurance contract at a fixed interest rate that you've already negotiated before that you technically pay back to yourself.
Right.
But in all of that, you know, if it gets really, really bad out there, I mean, own a cow and a water purifier, you know.
Yeah, right. No, I agree. Yeah. Well, I mean, you think we're heading for inflation, Mike?
Oh, I think you're heading for accelerated inflation like you've never seen. I mean, like you've never seen in this country. I mean, there's no way around it. Printing the money like they're printing, you betcha.
Okay.
So to all the listeners, the second best thing you can do is if you're in debt, you fix your rates. I mean, we're probably going to see them get close to just north of 4, and they may hit 4 on long-term rate lending in the next 6 to 9 months. And the key to this all is going to be lock everything, because your income will go up, and so it won't be worth as much. But when you're making good money, you can handle that debt as long as you don't have them calling your notes.
Right. Well, what happens to people who have fixed loans, like mortgages, and if we have hyperinflation, and you know, you're paying $800 or $1,000 a month on your house at, let's say, 6%, and all of a sudden there's hyperinflation, that $1,000 a month now is really nothing. I mean, it's like paying $100 a month. I mean, don't the banks falter then?
Well, no, because what happens is pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, okay? In this environment, it'll be very wise for everybody out there who is a good steward and who understands kingdom principles to stay at home. Don't go buying homes like you've been doing. Quit moving up just because your neighbors do it. And we've seen it over and over
generation. But to me, that would be a smart move, because if we anticipate a high rate of inflation, that house is not, I mean, the house payments. I mean, let's face it. When I bought my house, I had a hellacious mortgage payment. It was $220.28 a month. And that was a big...
Weren't you scared?
That was, yeah, it was scary. But after 30 years, it was nothing. But what if we accelerated that 30 years into, let's say, 10 months or a year, and all of a sudden, that $2,000 month payment is now only, I mean, equivalent to like $200 or whatever, you know, much less. I mean, the house is still, you know, a big house and, you know, the whole bit. But isn't it worth it doing it that way? Because now you have a fixed rate mortgage. It's not going up. So aren't you making money on the deal that way? Isn't the bank the one that's losing on the deal?
Well, that's what they want you to think. I mean, that's exactly where the Ponzi scheme comes in from the angle of financial institutions. They want you to think, keep moving. Go buy something else, you know.
But what happens in that case?
I'm not sure of the question.
Yeah, but what happens in that case? If I buy a house today that I cannot afford and I'm anticipating hyperinflation and my payments are $5,000 a month, but in a year from now, that $5,000 is really equivalent to only $500 a month. Man, I got this mansion that I'm only paying in equivalent $500 a month on a mortgage. Maybe the bank has got to go belly up on that one, but I've got to be making on the deal. Why isn't that a smart move?
Well, sure. I think I may understand the question here now. Absolutely, because when there's hyperinflation, there's going to be a big fall. And next time, I mean, what has happened here right now, in my guesstimation, is we have been very blessed. We were just purchased about 60 months to get our ducks in a row. Because the next time these things falter, they say, hey, we're going to bail them out. They're going to try and print the money again. We're right in the cluster that they're getting us in right now again. And what's going to happen is, you know, it's a very symbolic story. Joseph gave out food for money. And whenever the subjects ran out of money, he gave out food for livestock.
Yeah.
When the subjects ran out of money and livestock, he gave food for their real estate. When they ran out of real estate, then they were indentured slaves. And you're seeing the same season coming upon us. Right now, they just gave out money.
Okay.
Next, they're going to have to give away the corporation. We're going to have to.
Mike, I have to stop for station identification. I didn't do that on a quarter after the hour, and I'm being bugged to do so. Folks, you're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We have a caller on the line, and we're just talking about the financial future of this place that we live in. Please call in 646-652-4620 if you agree, disagree, or you have a different subject in mind. That's 646-652-4620. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. comments@libertytalkradio.com. Let's hear from you. Okay, Mike, I think we've probably beat that horse to death. I thank you very, very much for calling in, and thank you very much for being a listener. I certainly do appreciate it. And if I haven't sent you a Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt, you send me email with a mailing address, and I'll make sure with a T-shirt size, and I'll get a Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt out to you. Okay, fair enough.
All right. Thank
okay.
You. Fair enough.
Thank you very much, Mike. Take care. Boy, that was interesting. It was a financial advisor telling us about all sorts of intricate stuff when you get old and decrepit. You know, that kind of concerns me because, you know, I'm 65 going on 66. My knees hurt like hell, and I used to be a triathlete, so, you know, this is not fun for me. But I still bike, and I'm still very active. But I tell you, I can't imagine at 65 I'm hurting all over the place, and I'm in pretty good shape. I can't imagine what you feel like when you're 95 and whether or not you give a damn whether or not you have money or not. I mean, at that point, I just wonder. So, you know, it's best to have money, but it's best to know that you have money and there's a purpose for it. And my wife will be retiring soon, and we have to make those decisions, and they're very, very difficult to make. I know a decision that I try to make here right now is that I am retired now, and I'm always constantly looking, what am I going to do when I grow up. And I'm not sure what that is. I know my radio station is something that, you know, I grew into it, basically. I was forced into it. But, I mean, it's become part of me. And now I do this twice a week. So that's one thing that I'm doing. And I anticipate doing other things. I'm not really certain what they will be at this point. I know I like to play the drums. I practice almost every day. I try to practice every day at least. But, you know, there's things I want to do for myself. But, you know, with my money and after we get over this very, very, you know, with these tumultuous times, I got to decide what I'm going to do. So everyone should be doing the same thing. Unfortunately, not everyone has the wherewithal to do that. And they really have to start thinking about how they're going to spend the rest of their lives. It's kind of difficult. I think Mike brings up some excellent points. Well, okay, well, this is Liberty Talk Radio. Please call in 646-652-4620, 646-652-4620 with any comments, questions. It's open mic night. Anything you want to say is fine with me. Just don't get me to stop talking because I'm losing my voice again. Mm-hmm. All right. We were talking about government Ponzi schemes, and I'm glad Mike agreed with me. It made things easy for me. But you have to understand that the government now will be printing money to pay Social Security to people today, and that money is going to be paid back by the people's efforts of tomorrow. Just think about that, folks. The government prints money, gives it out, the money is created, we have to pay the money back, it issues bonds, and then they just fabricate the money out of thin air. It's what they call toilet paper money. And it's to be paid back, folks, listen carefully to this, it's paid back by the efforts of future generations. I want you to think about that for a second. Government Ponzi schemes, and they're all Ponzi schemes, whether it be Social Security, this infrastructure madness. You know that President-elect Barack Obama, you know, he's going to make decisive decisions. You know, he is so decisive. And what really hacks me off, folks, is the fact that here we have a guy making decisive decisions using other people's money. Now, what's so decisive about that? In fact, it's not even the money of people who are living. It's people, the money and the efforts that people will have to work in the future that are not even born yet. I mean, just think of that. Think of that. People who are not even born yet are going to be saddled with a debt made by Barack Obama's decision and all the other politicians. I'm not picking on him, but all of them. Just think of that. And these people are going to be strapped from the day they are born. And that reduces your liberty. And this is Liberty Talk Radio, and that's what we're talking about. It reduces your liberty. You have no liberty. You have no liberty when you're born into debt. You are born a slave. Because you've got to pay that debt back, and the only way that debt can be paid back is through taxation. And if you don't pay the taxes, you'll go to jail. Isn't that fine? Isn't that great? So, making these decisive decisions, acting quickly, is actually creating future slaves of our children's children. And they are slaves to the government because they're going to have to owe this money. And if they don't pay it back, they will go to jail. They will get arrested and go to jail. Just think of the cruelty of that. And yet, we look at our politicians, especially Barack Obama, as being a savior. Our savior in chief, as they call him. Well, you want to know some folks? If I can spend everybody else's money and not mine, I have absolutely no problem whatsoever. I mean, I would spend money like it's going. I would be very decisive, and I wouldn't think twice about it. We have a caller. Caller, area code 610. You're on the air. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Joe, hey, it's Andy. How you doing?
Hi, Andy. How are you?
I could not resist.
Okay, please, don't resist.
This Madoff thing?
Yes.
I tell you what, it is amazing because what you've got here is a situation where one crookster gets burned for $50 billion, and you have not only, you know, and the last caller did a good job of this, so I'm not even going to touch Social Security, throw in Medicare, throw in these trillions of dollars of bailouts. I mean, those are the mother of all Ponzi schemes, and everybody is excited about Mr. Madoff because he made off with some money that he shouldn't have.
Right.
It is just unreal. Unreal. You know, and the, you take a look at the media and the way they talk about this whole thing, you know, and it's, you know, you see article after article or a scathing indictment of this guy and his actions, and the whopper that's going on right under their noses, and they say nothing about it.
And yet just, we consider them our savior. You know, they're saving us. They're scamming us, and we're being saved. I just love that. I mean, I look at this stuff. I say, am I the only person thinking about that? Maybe just Andy and I, the only people in the world thinking about this. But it drives me nuts.
Oh, it's absolutely crazy. You know, and you said it pretty well in your email to me the other day. You know, when we were talking about this whole thing. You know, about why aren't people asking about the Federal Reserve and that Ponzi scheme?
Right.
You know, it'd be funny. I mean, it really would be funny if it wasn't so serious.
Right. That's true.
You know, that's the whole crux of this matter. I mean, you take the Federal Reserve and you look at how that thing works, and you take a look at the dollar that you hold in your pocket, and you have to realize that that dollar represents debt. You're trading debt instruments.
Right.
That's money that is owed to a private banking cartel. And people will say, oh, no, that's just a conspiracy theory. I've got news for you folks. That's not a conspiracy theory. Go do some research.
Go to the government website. The government will tell you that.
Exactly. They'll tell you who the 12 member banks of the Federal Reserve are,
right.
And they'll tell you how the whole thing works.
Right.
And they'll admit it to you.
Right.
This is not just some theory that's cooked up by people like us that allegedly have too much free time. Right? It's just, it seems like lately, I mean, we talked a couple weeks ago about this, and it seems every week there's something else that's going on.
Right.
You know, whether it's this or whether it's, you know, the Fed telling Bloomberg News to drop dead, you know, on their Freedom of Information Act request, you know, to find out who's getting all this money. And that's another thing that should be on the front page of every newspaper in the country. You know, you have the taxpayers are being put on the hook for trillions of dollars. You have future generations that are being encumbered for tens of trillions of dollars.
Right.
And when somebody asks, well, who's getting this money? They're told, no, we're not going to tell you. Drop dead.
You know,
you don't get to find out.
If I could spend your money, Andy, I'd be very decisive. I can tell you that. And I wouldn't think twice.
You know, that's like you going into a restaurant and they come over to you and they say, you're going to buy three people in this restaurant dinner tonight. And you say, well, who am I buying dinner for? And they say, we're not telling you. You're just going to buy them dinner.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you know, and I saw the topic that you had for tonight. And I just had a check in here.
That's great.
I don't want to take up too much of your time tonight.
No. Andy, thank you so much for calling and listening in. Okay, Andy. By the way, folks, this is Andy Sutton from mytwocentsonline.com and The Sensible Investor. And he's a fellow that I, you know, I do recommend that you at least subscribe to his weekly commentary, because once you do, you'll realize that this guy knows what he's talking about. He's the best in the business, and you'll subscribe to his paid subscription newsletter, The Sensible Investor, which I think is the very, very best in the business. Andy, thank you very much for calling, and I'll talk to you later.
Sure, I appreciate
it. Right, thank you.
All right, talk to you soon.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Caller, you're on the air. Oops, we lost the caller. Oops, here we go. Oh, caller. Oh, here we go.
Liberty Talk Radio?
Caller, you're on the air. Your first name and where you're calling from, please, and your question.
This is Aaron from Tulsa.
Aaron from Tulsa. Okay, Aaron.
Now my question is, if our Social Security system, et cetera, are merely Ponzi schemes. How other foreign countries get away with such social systems that support their people into retirement.
Okay, well,
and I'll take off the air.
Okay, Aaron. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We do have an echo. Let's see if we hang up and see what happens. I don't know why that happens. Let's see. Hello. All right. We lost the echo. I guess it was that phone call. Well, the question by Aaron was this. Why would what is the difference between if ours is a Ponzi scheme, then what is the difference between what we are doing and or how does the other ones work? I guess the other Social Security systems work. Well, quite frankly, they're all the same, I believe. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the intricacies of the of Social Security systems of other countries. But let me take. If you take any country that's more socialistic than the United States, and let's pick on Italy, for example. Italy right now may be asked to leave the European Union. Now, this is the scuttlebutt. There's nothing official about that. And the reason for that is that they have encumbered themselves to a point where their inflation rate is well beyond what the European system will allow. And also that means they have to continue to print more euros in order to support their economy. Now, it would seem to me that they are in the same position of everyone else who has a system whereby the governments do not have the money, in fact, in a lockbox and is investing it for you and then returning that money to you with your name on it. Because none of them do it that way that I know of. It's all money that comes in, goes to general revenues, and then goes out via general revenues. So they're all doing the same thing that we are, and they're all Ponzi schemes. In fact, every government program's a Ponzi scheme. Now, look at this infrastructure project. Now, maybe not we'll say, well, we're going to have decisive action, and we're going to have a new deal. Well, first of all, you know, Barack Obama is a smart man. He's not stupid. He knows that the New Deal did squat. In fact, it did nothing to take us out of depression. And in fact, it exacerbated the depression. He knows that. Now, that's the economic side of it. The political side was that Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the president at the time during the depression, was very popular because of the government programs and the infrastructure programs. So, and those infrastructure programs did absolutely nothing to create any productivity in the country. In fact, what it did is it took money from the private sector and put it into the public sector where it could not be reinvested. So it really screwed up the economy. Now, we are screwed up as it is. You could imagine if we exasperate it further with infrastructure products. And let me say this about infrastructure. Now, there's always a need for better roads, for better bridges, for you name it, for higher maintenance, always is. But each municipality has a responsibility to ensure that this occurs on a regular basis. This is ongoing stuff, folks. This is not something you do when you're financially strapped and then you have an infrastructure program. This is where the tax money that comes in from numerous sources, excise taxes and whatever, in municipalities, in local areas, and that certain portion of that should be going to the maintenance of the roads, to the fixing of the bridges, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And those places that have toll booths that are toll roads, that toll money should be going to the roads. But what happens is that they take that money and they squander it because there's nothing politically sexy, about spending people's money on infrastructure. No one has ever been elected because they said, we are going to ensure that all your tax dollars go for infrastructure. Vote for me. No, some guy's going to say, no, we're going to build a stadium and we're going to build this new highway and we're going to build this airport that we don't need. All these crazy things that we don't need that sound sexy and politically expedient, that's what they talk about. And these people get elected. Okay, Aaron, I hope that answers your question. Now, this is Joe Cristiano. I'm your host of Liberty Talk Radio. The call-in number is 646-652-4620. We now have five open lines. We only had three before. Now we have five open lines. 646-652-4620. I would appreciate anyone calling in simply because my voice is starting to go, and I do need some help. Please help. Call in 646-652-4620. After the show, please send your comments to comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. We're talking about government Ponzi schemes. Now, if you look at it, and the disastrous part about this thing is that the government lies to you. Now, they don't lie by direct lying. They lie by omission. You know, and people do not want to know the truth. They do not. I had a program that said, you can't handle the truth. In America, you cannot handle the truth. And I'll give you an example. We had my wife's audiology practice. I had a little dinner for her business practice and for my company. And we had a little Christmas luncheon. And we sat there. And this woman that works for a very nice lady that works for my wife, she brought a friend of hers who was a retired school teacher. And this woman brought up the fact, not the retired school teacher, but the woman who worked for my wife. She said, "Oh, I heard that they're going to change the history books again." And she was talking about some changes in history books. And I had made mention. Now, I didn't bring up the subject. She did. I said, "You know, that's kind of interesting because it doesn't make any difference what they change in history books because the history books really aren't, you know, factual. I mean, they're not history because our children couldn't really handle, young kids couldn't handle the truth because the truth is kind of dark, it's kind of bleak. It's not very, very pretty. And if we told the truth from the very beginning, I said, there wouldn't be much loyalty in the United States. They'd say, boy, what a horrible nation this is, if they knew the truth. Well, the retired school teacher didn't respond to that, didn't verbally respond to that, but what she did was interesting. She put her face down, and she turned away from me like, I'm not going to listen to this rubbish, you know? And now here's a school teacher who's been teaching this garbage history, this comic book history, probably for 30 years, and she never realized for a minute that the comic book garbage history, the lies and deceits that she was teaching her kids, you know, was exactly that. Lies and deceits, just crayon history. And yet we cannot accept it. I mean, we can't go. And it would be one thing if she said, oh, geez, no, I disagree with you because, and she gave me a good, it would have been refreshing. But she didn't do that. She just turned, put her head down and turned around like, I'm not listening to this. And we can't handle the truth, folks. And we cannot handle the fact, the truth, that our government is, in fact, one big Ponzi scheme. Every single program is a Ponzi scheme. Every one. And the people we are indebting are the people that are not even born yet. And they're going to pay for those things through their efforts, through their labor, through their work, through their ingenuity. They are going to pay for it. And yet, we make people like Barack Obama Man of the Year. Why? Why is he Man of the Year? Because he's a politician? He's a smooth talker? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever, folks. What good is it if someone gets up as a sweet-talking con man, which that's what Barack Obama is. He's a con man. And I say he's a con man because he's a smart man. He's brilliant. He went to Harvard Law School. He knows better. Is someone going to suggest for one moment that he understands, I understand economics better than he does? I don't think so. I wouldn't think of that for a second. The only difference between Barack Obama and me is that I wouldn't get up and tell these people these lies. I wouldn't con these people into believing that I'm their savior. I would be honest with them. And yet I'm the honor, and there are plenty of other people that I know that would do the same thing that I would do. But yet they're not made Man of the Year. They're called kooks. They're nuts. They're crazy people. They're fringe. They're kind of the funny thinking people. We don't become persons of the year, but Barack Obama, who's a con man, does. And that's what's happening to our nation. We are becoming a nation of believers, believing everything that we hear on this garbage TV. Hank Paulson was the runner-up for Person of the Year. We have a caller on the line. Caller, you're on the line.
Caller. Hello, Joe. This is John Fanning.
John, hello.
How are you?
John, thank you for calling in.
Well, I wanted to call in earlier, but I noticed you were talking about Barack Obama, so I wanted to make a few comments about that.
Please, the next 10 minutes are yours, John.
Okay. Well, one of the things I've noticed is that despite the fact that I don't know if your listeners know much about my background, but you know, I'm a member of a group called Tulsa Truth, and we've been a huge advocate of ending the war. We believe that the current administration is involved in war crimes against humanity, and that it goes much deeper than that. Tulsa Truth was formed by a group of people who don't really believe that the events that had transpired on 9/11 were done by a group of religious fanatics that lived in the Middle East, but that there is actually some involvement of people high up at high levels of some of the different institutions within our own country, such as the Pentagon and the political administrations, as well as some of the movers and shakers in Washington, D.C., who had ulterior motives, wanted to create an external enemy so that they could further their own agenda and capture natural resources throughout the United States and the world. I'm not the United States, but throughout the world, as well as limit some of our constitutional rights here in the United States order to get the American people behind their own agenda.
Right.
And while that movement got a lot of steam and a lot of, I guess we had a lot of people in it who were very passionate about getting rid of the Bush administration, the thing that amazes me is that people who are totally awake to what George Bush and company have been doing now think that all of a sudden this new guy is going to come in and rewrite all those laws, the Military Commission Act, the Patriot Act, and that he's going to bring home the troops within a couple of years, just a slow exit from the Middle East, and that freedom will once again ring in this country. And while some of these people were left-leaning, I think they still were willing to admit that there was a possibility there's something going on. Now that they're no longer, even though Barack Obama has said nothing to the effect that he's going to bring home the troops, he has not indicated at all that he's going to repeal things like the Patriot Act or the Military Commissions Act. These people are now virtually silent. They're kind of in a wait-and-see mode, but I mean, even as you watch his administration being built, a huge group of people who are completely and totally, just more of the same, people like Rahm Emanuel, and he's keeping Gates as his defense commissioner, and it's kind of more of the same. Many of the Clinton administration, the gentleman who's going to be the attorney general, was the assistant attorney general under Janet Reno. So it's just more of these Washington insiders, more of these neocon conservatives, more of these folks who are beating the war drums. And it just doesn't seem like there's going to be a whole lot of change. So I guess the change was Barack Obama. We're actually going to have a new president. Other than that, everything else is going to stay about the same. But a lot of these people who were advocates of the truth movement and of the peace movement and things like that are now virtually silent because they think everything is now going to change for the better. And I'm afraid that they're going to be sadly disappointed, Joe. I think we're looking at more of the same from this administration. And it amazes me how people cannot get past this left-right paradigm.
Right.
And that you know, the Bush people who were supporting the neocons and liked what was going on, now they think the end of the world is coming because now Barack Obama's been elected.
Right. Well, you know, when they talk about change, as soon as you ask them to identify or define change, they speak in platitudes. And we're not talking about platitudes. We're talking about concrete steps of change. For example, closing down Abu Ghraib, you know, Gitmo, you know, all that stuff. You know, bringing the troops home now, dismantling the empire, taking the missiles out of Eastern Europe, you know, non-intervention of all the all sovereign countries, and us coming home and just minding our own damn business. I mean, these are concrete steps, but you don't hear that. You hear things like, you know, we are going to further the United States in a more positive manner, you know, for the benefit of the citizens, and oh my goodness gracious, and people cheer like crazy, John. And that's
you hear a lot of pandering to the world.
That's right, pandering and platitudes. Right, we should call it pandering and platitudes. You know, and there's nothing concrete in it whatsoever. Drives me nuts. And I agree with you. I don't think we're going to see a change at all. We're going to have a change in feeling, but feeling doesn't do anything for us when it comes down to the actual programs themselves. They're still going to be there.
No, We're headed toward. Obama has actually advocated more troops in Afghanistan.
That's right.
Strengthening the forces there. We're looking at a war between Pakistan and India if things escalate there. And I think that it's been proven, or at least not, it's been indicated that there's some Western influence behind that. And it seems like things are continuing to escalate on the world front. I mean, Russia now has their warships in Cuba and Venezuela, and it's like, I think Condoleezza Rice said, well, it's not a problem the other day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, if people don't realize that things are not getting better, they don't look that much better, and yes, we might have this new president, but I don't think that Obama has a tremendous amount of skeletons in the closet, and he hasn't even started. I mean,
that's right.
You know, whether it's rhetoric or whatever, there's something going on with his birth certificate, and he won't share that, and people refuse to talk about that. And you know, as good of a guy as he is, if he's got something in the closet that he doesn't want to be revealed, you know, the controllers, the people who want to get him to do their bidding, the military-industrial complex, call it what you will, they are not. They've got him in their back pocket.
Right.
If they've got someone who's a pervert, and they've got pictures of them with you know, with children in compromising positions, they will use that.
That's right.
They won't reveal it until it serves their needs.
Right.
I mean, everybody talks about these governors who are getting busted. The guy from New Jersey and the one from Chicago, the one with the funny name from Chicago.
Oh yeah. Blagojevich.
Blagojevich. Yeah. Well, I mean, from what I understand, he has kind of a shady past. He was was not a real clean character. And then all of a sudden this comes out that he's selling off Barack Obama's seat to the highest bidder. But one of the things he did the day before they announced the investigation was he advocated that all of the state agencies discontinue association with Bank of America, because Bank of America would not lend the money to those, the window company that had the workers on strikes in Chicago. Do you remember that?
No,
the
I don't.
The company was solvent.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was his motivation to do that. And then the next day, they announced this investigation on him. He was already a corrupt character. He wasn't doing anything out of the ordinary. What he did do that was out of the ordinary is actually call the marker on Bank of America. And if, you know, this is all speculative, but this is how I believe Washington, D.C. operates and most of the political structure, that what you end up having is people who are compromised. And that's why they
right.
are allowed to even take the positions that they have. That's
right.
why they get the funding that they do.
Northern Republic Radio News.
We are, John, we're out of time.
All right, Jeff.
Thank you for calling.
Rocky.
All right.
In October
Bye-bye.
This year, Nobel Prize winner John Forbes Nash Jr. told an audience of more than 200 people that if there were some sort of international monetary standard, such as the gold,